and listeners, kooks and ho-dads, welcome and mahalo for joining us here on the outskirts of High Strange, where you will find Phenomena City Limits. We're a podcast that will, every month, explore tales of the weird, open-minded, irreverent, and authority of absolutely nothing. That's us. I am your host, Taylor, and across the table from me today is my brother, Seb. Seb, how you doing?
I'm doing good. The year's just flying by. I can't believe
Dude, for real.
Serious, yeah. How you doing, man?
Better than I was last time.
Nice.
We recorded. Yeah. Boy, oh boy, that whatever it was, that cold hit our family hard.
Yeah.
More than half of us got it. And everyone else is better. And now I've just got like lingering allergy cough.
Right. Okay.
So, you know, kind of my typical thing this time of year is the allergy cough. But yes, better. I am happy for that because this is an episode where I'm going to be talking a bit more. Season 1, episode 4, Counterculture Cryptids. Oh, we're not talking Bigfoot. We're not talking Mothman. We're talking a whole other set of weirdos. But even before we get to that, we haven't talked about this in a while. Has Seb, did anything weird happen?
Yeah. Well, something weird did happen. It's not paranormal. To make a long story short, I saw a movie trailer last summer, I think, probably, on YouTube.
Okay.
The movie looked amazing. Finally got around to seeing it again since that I finally came on Apple TV and I 7-day trial kind of deal. Watched the whole movie. Movie was so-so. I didn't see any footage from the trailer, so I was thinking maybe it was like...
They do that.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe like it was stuff that is going to get in the director's release. So I went online to investigate. Turns out the trailer I'd watched was a fake trailer made by a fan. It had nothing to do with the film itself. And the trailer was so much better than the real film. I was shocked.
Oh, I was amazed. What was the film?
It was a Joaquin film called Napoleon by Ridley Scott.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so it was kind of bizarre because it was like for a while there I was thinking, like, are there two Napoleons? Am I living in a parallel universe right now? What's going
on? It's actually Joaquin Phoenix's Napoleon Dynamite.
Yes, exactly, right.
There's a visual for you.
But how about you? Anything going
on? Not particularly weird, but we did take a spring break trip up to California.
Yeah.
Had a good time there. Nothing really weird out of that, although strangely enough there was a kind of horror theme circus show there called Paranormal Cirque.
Huh.
So it's kind of funny, our first night there, and I'm like, we're up on a third floor and I'm like looking out and here's this big neon sign on top of the tent, Paranormal. I'm like, wow, okay,
it's a good sign.
Yeah, right.
Well,
obviously lots of, you know, Bigfoot related stuff up that way, but we've got some friends here in town who they took a spring break trip down to southern New Mexico.
Okay.
And basically did just a big kind of driving tour of southern New Mexico. And in my head, as I'm ready to blurt out, did you guys go to Roswell? They pipe up with, and we went through Roswell.
Yay!
And I was like, oh, cool. And then they go, and we got you something.
Amazing.
And I was like, what?
Yes.
So, yeah, they got me a really cool Roswell.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah.
I love it.
Very, very cozy. Very cozy. We had some cold weather last weekend here. Mm-hmm. Nice to be able to put on. But yeah, they checked out the museum.
Nice.
You know, they checked out the shops downtown. They made a point of going to the UFO-shaped McDonald's.
Oh, yeah. Legendary.
Yes. Yeah. So that was all very... So not so much weird. It's not like a seeing ghosts or anything, but...
You did go to a Gravity Hill recently, right?
Oh, that is true. Yes. Yes, we did. On our way, I stopped by the Legend Fusion Hill.
Love the name.
In the town might be too big of Leggett, California.
Okay.
And this is, ever seen the cartoon Gravity Falls? Fantastic and amazing. The Mystery Shack on that show is more or less Bane Hill.
Oh, wow.
For the most part. I mean, there's hints of the mystery spot in there. There's hints of... oh my gosh, there's one up in Oregon that the name escapes me right now. But they're all kind of a mishmash together. But when that show ended, the creator had like a statue of the show's made and like hidden up in on land up in Oregon.
Mm.
And there were clues to try and find him.
Okay.
But there were so many people going up onto this land stuff that it became a problem. Oh. So he actually worked with Confusion Hill and was like, hey, I'm going to bring this down. Can we show it off here?
Oh, okay.
And they were like, yeah. So we got pitched Bill Cipher. So that was very
cool. That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, anyway, like I said, this month we are talking about none of the cryptids you're used to hearing about. Let's just put it that way. This whole episode kind of came about because, like, I love surf rock.
Mm-hmm.
And I dig, like, custom car culture. And I love the Santa Cruz skateboard scream, you know, and I went, wait a second, there's this whole kind of like subculture of like cryptids and monsters and this whole kind of like crazy, extremely drawn set of characters that, you know, you don't hear people talking about because it's not Mothman, it's not Bigfoot, it's not, you know, Nessie, it's not anything like that. And so I was like, where did that get its start? That was my root question. And I just did some basic Googling at first. Everything was coming up. Ratfink, right? Ed Big Daddy Roth, 1962, 1963. And my gut just said that there was something that there was something before that. I didn't see anything in, like, I mean, the Google algorithm is going to give you what it gives you, right?
Right.
But I just felt convinced that there was something, some genesis point early. So I reached out, and I want to give special shout outs and thank to Spike from the Hula Girl. You should totally check out their music. Also Spike's Breezeway Cocktail Hour on YouTube that he does. I reached out to him and was like, hey, what do you think? And he's like, I kind of think it was Ratfink, but sounds like a great idea. I can't wait to hear the episode. I also reached out to a classic car collector named Randy Carls. He's on Instagram as Bug and Box, being like, hey, what do you think? And he's like, it was Ratfink. And then I thought, you know what? I am going to reach out to friend and friend of the show, AP Strain, that is at A Prodigious on Twitter, and was like, hey, I've got this idea for a show, and everything on so far says Ratfink, but my gut's earlier than that. And bless him, he was like, this sounds really cool, let me poke around, let me do a little bit of research. And so he came back with stuff as early as World War One.
Oh wow.
And I was just like, oh, hang on, what the heck. So I'm gonna kind of get into you have also done some research on this, and I thank you immensely,
because there's
stuff that I have never even heard of. This is gonna be fascinating. So this House of a Different Mouse, and it's kind of weird because there are a number of connections to and reaction to Disney that you are going to hear tonight, folks. But I'm gonna start with what we kind of call the proto era. Right, pre, like, mainstream kind of stuff. Now, you've got on a guy whose last name is Dubois. I don't even know how I would pronounce his first
name. I'm gonna guess Coeur. I'm gonna spell it Coeurt. That's Dubois.
Yeah. But if he's got a French last name, yeah, Coeur might be a good pronunciation.
But you know what? I love the topic, and I love that it's probably the only time I could think that we might be able to shoehorn this guy into one of our episodes. Seeing that we're kind of talking about, pop culture critters dreamed up in the minds of 20th century America, illustrators and comic artists, you know. And this guy, fascinating story. He's born in 1881, died in 1906. He was actually like a foreign service officer in the diplomatic corps, served in Paris, India, and Naples, Savannah. But before he became a big-time diplomat, in 1900, he served with the United Forest Service.
Okay.
And he was also an artist, an illustrator. He was the illustrator for a book that came in 1910. Amazing book. It's called Fierce Adventures of the Lumberwoods with a Desert and Mountain. And get this. This is a book. It's a bizarre book. It's a fantasy field guide.
From 1910.
Written by a guy named William Cox, who was Minnesota's first state forester and commission conservation.
Okay.
And this book, so these fearsome creatures basically were a big part of oral tradition. tradition in North American logging camps at the turn of the 20th century.
Okay,
there,
sure.
There were tall tales. There were a means to pass the time. So it was a way to kind of haze newcomers to the logging. And it's basically, you go through this book and each little section is a different cryptid that supposedly people could find in forests of North America and a couple in the desert.
Right.
Really bizarre creatures. There's a full scan of the book on Google Books. See our show notes.
Yes, see our show notes for a lot of, yes, to a lot of books and music. We'll store, by all means, check it out.
Yeah, and it's just a really neat little snapshot of, you know, it's capturing folklore of the time, weird creatures and monsters. Most of them are kind of tongue in, but it's really neat because it's really easy to find, like, modern day printings of this book. But there's a first edition for sale right now on eBay signed by the author. It's like $500.
Whoa.
And I keep looking at it and I'm like, damn, that's cool. That's really cool.
I mean, you get a text.
Right, yeah.
I mean, first edition signed by the author. Like, I just want to give an example of it. Unfortunately, my idea for this episode would be awesome. We were a visual medium.
Oh.
And we're not.
we're like a telephone petting zoo. Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We are a telephone petting. So I am going to make, when this episode drops, of sharing example, you know, not just our, you know, like our hero. So I want to just give an example of what you find in this book. And I am looking at, I'm going to pronounce it the Tripodero, which looks kind of like a half lizard, half slug with Big Bird's legs. If Big Bird's legs were longer and way skinny, right? That's the only way that I can easily describe. And it says here that the chaparral and foothill forests of California contain many queer freaks of one kind or another. That's true. There's also, like, the Tripodero. Trust me, I've been all sorts on you. Same with the Santa Cruz Mountains, sorry, I call it. One of the strangest and least, the Tripodero, an animal with two tractile or telescopic legs and a tail like a kangaroo. This peculiarity instructs the animal to elevate itself at will so that it may tower chaparral, or if it to pull in its leg compact form, crowded brush. The Tripodero's body is not large, but it is solidly built. It is nearly all snout, the value of which is seen in the method by food is as the animal travels through the brush-covered country at along its legs from time to time, thus shoving itself with the brush for purposes of observation. Anyway, if it sights game within a range of 10 rod, there's rods on your tape. I don't know how long a rod. anyway, let's just say.
Let's just say.
It takes aim with its snout and tilts itself until the right elevation is obtained. Then with astounding force blows a sun-dried quid of clay, knocking its victim senseless. I feel like I've seen one of the Mario.
Totally.
And it says parenthetic. A supply of these quids is always carried left jaw.
I love it.
Yeah. The Tripodero then contracts legs and bores its way through the brush to where it stays. Bone is cracked and eaten.
Oh.
Wow.
Crazy. But the artwork is just insane. So if you folks
get
a chance to take a look at this, it'd be wacky.
Yeah, definitely worth checking out. Like that alone, I always feel hit that whole book in some ways.
Oh my gosh.
But believe it or not, we also kind of come back around. Larry Hill was a newspaper illustrator in, I believe, Evansville, Indiana, which north of Hopkinsville, not by very much. And he did a sketch for the Evan paper of the Hopkinsville Goblin, which I've got an example of it here in the show notes. And it's not the Hopkinsville Goblin image that we are so used to seeing.
No, not at all.
This one looks as if the Hopkinsville Goblin was maybe kind of a shady door-to-door salesman.
Maybe.
I don't know if it's just the fact that this is like an old photocopy of the newspaper, but we've got the pointed ears. The head is more Hey Arnold shape than, you know, alien gray shape. but it looks as though it has a little fedora on its head. I don't think that's actually what it looks like. It's got like two slanted eyebrows. Again, not sure that's exactly what it is. This is not the greatest drawing. But yeah, he looks like he's, you know, a fuller brush salesman case away from being a salesman. Oddly enough, Larry Hill actually later went on to create the mascot for an Evansville, Indiana high school basketball team. But Larry also serves as an example of newspapermen and illustrators who, you know, were kind of tasked with the job of like, well, we just have this description of something. We don't have a photograph mm-hmm. of it, but we want to represent it to our readers.
Right.
And so it was on them to kind of draw, sketch, possibly embellish. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say one way or the other. The news does kind of do that. I've got another link here, this one from the San Francisco Examiner. And it is as well in the show notes for those who want to see what this looks like. But it actually is about the gremlin that wartime avians would talk about. And so this kind of branches kind of some of World II airplane art
right.
that we get. You think of nose art and it's pinup girls.
Right.
And it's stuff like that, but it wasn't always. You have these gremlins that pilots, you know, superstitiously thought would mess with their plane mm-hmm. while they're in flight. And we've got a couple here on this newspaper article that are really kind of unusual. There's one on the right here that's kind of a little bit more the hero-ish because it's bigger. It's an enlargement of what's on a fuselage just to its left here. But the one in the upper left corner, really strange, wearing a complete, like, suit with some sort of either backpack or tank on its back. It's got a helmet, but it's got these kind of like enlarged eyes, you know, kind of like tube trumpet shaped, like weird kind of like bulbous snout on it. The other one actually looks like it might also have a cigarette mouth, but it's also had a wrench like into the lives of the aviators.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to kind of shape. It's been almost 2 months of thinking about this episode.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, for like almost an entire month of that, I did not go as far as I wanted to with it. But if you think about it, we are now at least historically an era where. We have motion, we have animation, we have Disney, right? Disney gets a start in, oh gosh, they just had their 100th, so 1923.
Yep.
We are also getting our early Looney Tunes in World War II. So it occurs to me that we need to look at, for example, the work of Tex Avery. Tex Avery, an American animator, cartoonist, director, and voice actor. He's most significant for Warner Brothers, and MGM Studios, where he was crucial in the creation of Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, Porky Pig, Elmer Fudd, Beast, Louis Squirrel, The Wolf, Red Hot Riding Hood. Remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Now, he gained a lot of interest, technical, directorial style, his brand of, right? Avery's attitude toward animation, opposite of Walt Disney and other conventional family cartoons at the time. You know, it's funny. It's even in modern time, for the most part, or at least I think back to like when I was in high school ago, and I go, oh, it's Disney. It's also whitewashed. It's also cute. It's also like it doesn't have an edge. Yeah. It doesn't have a grittiness to it. Like I always told myself and I always told my friends that, I mean, like, really, come on, guys, who's going to win in a street fight? The Disney gang or the Looney Tunes gang? It's going to be the Looney Tunes gang. Like, come on, you know? But that whole mentality of like, here is this, you know, sort of pristine wholesomeness, you know, everything is clean line, realistic. That all kind of resides with Disney. And Disney, I think even then was such a powerhouse or becoming such a powerhouse, that I think a lot of what we're talking about tonight happens as a reaction to it. Says here that, Avery's cartoons were known for sarcastic, ironic, absurdist, irreverent, and sometimes sexual tone in nature. I mean, like, really, Red Hot Riding Hood? Yeah, she was. They focused on sight gags, surrealist humor. I mean, think of all the Bugs Bunny. Some were just off the czar. They were like Salvador Dali alive. Rapid pacing. Racial stereotypes, which, hey.
Product of its time.
We right. recognize that it shouldn't fly now. Violent humors. With wacky characters who broke the fourth wall.
Oh, that's great.
Right? You know? So his early career was working on like the Oswald the Lucky Rabbit cartoons, but by the mid-30s he'd been hired on at Schlesinger Studio, Pat Nobel. And he worked with people like Bob Clampett, Chuck Jones, another big Warner Brothers animator, Sid Sutherland, Virgil Ross. Now the group was given quite a bit of liberty style and content that was in contrast studios where things were a lot more troll. And a guy named Gary Morris, he describes a approach to thing. And Morris says, above all, Avery steered the Warner Brothers house style away from desk centrality to adults who appreciated Avery's speed, sarcasm, and irony, as well as to kids who liked the nonstop action. Disney's cute and cuddly ugly creatures under Avery's guide transformed into unflappable wits. Bunny, endearing buffoon pig, or dazzling. He's like Daffy Duck. And that's what we get. This idea of taking that kind of like clean cutness and trans, that will make a little bit more sense. Get to Ed Roth here. Even the classic fairy tale, right? This is basically Disney's bread and butter, was appropriated by Avery, who made innocent heroines like Red Riding Hood into sexy jazz babes, more than a match for any wolf. Avery also endeared himself to intellectuals by constantly breaking through the artifice of the cartoon, having characters leap out of the end credits, loudly object to the plot of the cartoon that they were starring in, or speak directly to the audience. There is, I would almost, now that I think about it, argue that a lot of like what we love about Monty Python Circus comes from this kind of style, right? Be in the middle of a sketch, right? And loudly object to the plot of this, right? Kind of break that wall. Now, obviously, I realized the way I'm going to cover every last person or influence or source of things. And I realize I haven't even talked about really a single crypt aside from the Tripodero so far. All right, I'm looking more at history right now. But we have to also recognize Avery and Looney Tunes in general went on to inspire all sorts of future cartoons that kind of take this, like, you know, transformed wackiness, this almost manic things. We've got stuff like Ren and Stimpy that we watched in the 90s, Animaniacs in the later 90s, and a ton more. I mean, you can even look it up as SpongeBob and get kind of, you know, zoomed in, hyper-tailed. Like, I mean, I think about stuff where you would see, like, Ren and Stimpy. You know, you'd hear this, like, fog. And it would just be, like, the hyper-realistic, you know, highly tailed, roast, rot, and holes and worms coming out of his teeth or whatever. Right? So from there, and kind of from the end of World War II, we kind of branch in car culture. And I say both of those, hey, at the beginning of both. So the way that I look at this is that we have a lot of this coming together.
Right.
To kind of create, I mean, a sort of genesis. We've got soldiers returning from war, having created Nose Art, watching Looney Tunes cartoons, and probably some Disney ones too, as well as having experienced the horrors of war, right? And they brought with them this kind of like do-it-yourself and a desire to modify stuff. You know, you got a lot of these pilots coming back, and they were flying P-51s and P-38s and stuff, and they got, on some level, addicted to speed. Not methamphetamines, actual going fast, just to be clear. Okay. Just right. So this group returning were met by the line fences of early 50 con, as well as the atomic in terms of design aesthetic.
Right.
Mid-century modern. I live in a mid-century modern house. Lots of clean lines, straight line, you know. And that collision of opposite, I think, plus kind of, you know, process trauma of war, it led us to Hot Rod, it led us to Rat Fink, and a whole host of wacky
stuff. Right.
So the first thing we got to start with is that in the early 1960s, Ed Roth, who'd earned the nickname, he sat down and sketched out Anti-Mickey Mouse. Putting this in the simplest of terms, right? He was just so turned off by the squeaky cleanness of Disney, wanted to just turn it upside down. And so he came up Rat Fink. And there's no denying that Rat Fink really is a genesis point for a lot of what we get from about 1960.
I think you're exactly right. I mean, I can think of growing up as a kid in the 80s. You know, I didn't surf, I didn't skate, but if ever I saw a skateboard or a surfboard with like a crazy picture or sticker decal on it, you could almost trace back like a genealogy all the way back to character, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, this is also, I didn't even put it in the show notes, but talking in terms of our era growing up, Garbage Pail.
Oh, huge. Yeah, exactly.
Think of any single Garbage Pail you've ever seen, and it draws that same lineage from Rat Fink. It's, you know, got this, you know, green, chubby rat with bugged out eyes, with, you know, pointy, gnarled. We've got, if you look closely at him, we just get bumps and boil, you know, almost, you know, the bloodshot eyes, the exterms of certain proportion, right? Particularly large ears, long twisted tail, huge feet, comparatively speaking. And we get some of that monstrous detail. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily in just in proportion, but monster-like. Mm-hmm. And Rat Fink, along with Ed Roth's work on hot rods in terms of design and paint, catapults him into stardom. And we do have a link that has got, I think, at least most of a book about the art of Ed Roth's work in the show notes. It's an interesting, there's actually a lot of good videos and podcasts out there if you get a little bit more in. But the interesting thing that kind of takes off at the same time is model car making.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, you know, model cars, model planes, model boats, they'd all been around for a while, but they were starting to stagnate, you know? A number of different companies were looking for the next hot thing, and they found it in people like Ed Roth. They found it in people like Stanley. They found it in people like Bill Campbell. The latter two we'll talk about here in a moment. Ed Roth not only came up with Rat Fink, but we've got Mr. Gas, Dragnut, Mother's Worry, Super Fink, Angel Fink, Scuzz Fink, Fink Eliminator. A lot of these, a whole lot of, if you look them up, if you see art of them, all very hot rod drag-based. You know, there is a high octane aspect to them.
Yeah, I mean, I agree 100%. I mean, in doing research for this episode, I was amazed that there were so many characters. You know, doing a little bit of research myself on Big Daddy Roth, it's fascinating. Apparently, from what I can tell, you know, in the late 58, you know, he's basically going to car shows and airbrushing his characters onto t-shirts that he's selling. He starts selling these quote-unquote weirdo t-shirts in the advertisement section of car magazine.
Yep.
And so basically, he goes from being sort of like this underground hot rod car customizer kind of figure. Like, so 58, all of a sudden by 65, just like, what, 5, 6, 7 years later, these little creatures, these little cryptids that he's creating are showing a plastic model. And in doing tonight's, doing research tonight's episode, it's interesting because I was going around online trying to figure, okay, who are these little creatures, are there any backstories, and honestly the best place I could find is sort of like you know, information about the characters, because they're not characters in comic books, they're just apparently the instructions, the printed instructions for how to assemble the model, a lot of times would have a little bit of funny copy, would basically give the story of some of these.
You're right, I'm actually looking for the one at for Angel Fink.
Yeah I've got
right now.
Yeah, Angel Fink was a great one. So basically, he, you know, Rat Fink's sort of like the Mickey Mouse, you know, the main character. But there's this whole Fink. There's a creature called Angel Fink, which looks more like a witch crossed with a vampire, almost.
Kind of, yeah.
And there's some really funny copy here. It says, Angel Fink, quote-unquote, big mama of the Fink family, received her nitro blend in the world, but now it's kitchens of Batty Crockett, and Chef Malady. After a couple of operation shakeups, which resulted in blast, Angel Fink found employment as a perfume mixer, and her most famous concoction, Canal Number 6, which quite a stink in the perfume. After blowing the perfume job, Angel found part-time action in a southern drag coffee, low in calories, low in caffeine, but high in nitro.
For real, get up and go.
Today,
I love it.
Today, Angel Fink and her high dragon.
No, that's hip. Oh, hip dragons.
You're right. Hip dragon. At the Roth pad by something blending
by lighter fuel. Custom blending butane lighter fuel and nitro for go juice in Volkswagens from Pasadena.
What? And yes. Other dragging machines. Oh my gosh.
That's awesome.
The other one I really wanted to mention really quickly was another member of Big Daddy Roth's Fink, is a gentleman by the name Fink Sturman, or Fink Eliminator.
Fink Eliminator. Why would eliminate the Finks? I'm confused
here. Why would we? So this is another little creature. He's like,
oh, man.
He has a huge hammer and he's like bashing little automobiles. So what's going on here?
Are you going to be able to I mean, I'm
eating it. I transcribed it, so I'm good.
Oh, excellent. Good for you.
All right, so Ed Big Daddy Roth, whose customers have won the gold at car shows everywhere, knows from his own wild experience how certain cars can bug the lover. For years, Big Daddy tolerated, but even his sunny disposition finally boiled over, and out of the vapors emerged gory Fink Eliminator, wipes out the cars, thinking, since all men think differently, no information available on which car is exterminated when you give Fink Eliminator the evil word. Just in case Fink Eliminator is exhausted from using that mighty mallet, there's a cherry bomb to finish off the job. This bomb bomb was inspired by the fruit of the Potomac River. To date, Fink Eliminator has not thrown anything across the... But Big Daddy reminds us that history does have a... I gotta say, this... I love this stuff. Like, I have no idea if Roth came up with this. It was like, or if it was some marketing guy in the Revell Model Corporation.
Yeah.
Really quickly, two things I really want to point out. First of all, how much do I wish, like... we could go and talk to Dad, because like I feel like this is these are the kind of model kits he might have actually ate as a kid.
Very possibly.
You know? And the other thing was, there's one of his characters, which I desked some of this backstory on, that I just couldn't find. I looked on eBay to see if there was a good photo of the instruction. I couldn't. It's a character by the name of Scuzz Fink.
Yes.
Who actually is a space alien version of the Fink family.
Oh,
nice. He comes with a little like flying monster bat. I couldn't find the backstory, but I did find a crazy ad where it was like, created this character, and then they had a contest whereby members of the public could... come up with a named character. And apparently, like, the prize you would get was you get to like hang out with Big Daddy Roth for a day or so.
Oh man.
And it was the winner, of course, somebody named it Scuzz Fink, and apparently it was like a 12-year-old girl or something like that.
Oh, no kidding.
Yes, it's some weird bizarre thing.
You know? I have got to say, I am looking at pictures right now of Scuzz Fink, and if there is a creation of Roth's that looks most like something I would see from like Jimbo Phillips, who does a lot of the Santa Cruz skateboard stuff these days, this kind of fits that look. I mean, it is really kind of goopy, slimy, extreme.
Right.
In that sense, I am going to have to point share pictures. Scuzz Fink.
He's great.
When were episodes next month. Sorry, excuse me. Later this month. Sorry, it's the middle of April. Right? Now, you actually also found that these guys, the creatures themselves, let's say, released an album.
Yeah, apparently they got huge. The model kits apparently sold. I think in the 70s there was a trading card set, but yeah, back in the 60s, somehow, some way, somebody decided to cash in, and they used a musical album, an LP, about these little crazy guys.
Now, Seb, I can do you one better.
Uh-oh.
Because today I was like, huh, I wonder if this Hot Rod Hootenanny is on Spotify.
Okay.
And so I started typing in Hot Rod Hootenanny.
Uh-huh.
And I came up with not only that album by Mr. Gasser and the Weirdos, but also Rods and Rat Finks, as well as Sir Fink.
Oh, so there's multiple albums.
There are three albums.
Oh my gosh.
Holy they are cats. All available on Spotify. If you are a Spotify user, I listened to a bit. And in fact, I've got a clip of one of the songs from Hot Rod Hootenanny called Termites in My Woody. let's take a listen.
Alright.
I found the phone book, yellow pages, and checked them out one by one. I couldn't find X. Terminators, food put them all on the run.
Termites in my woody, chomp, chomp. Termites in my woody, chomp, chomp. Termites in my woody, chomp, chomp. Termites in my woody, chomp.
Now, Termites in my woody is, you know, I don't know what to say.
Amazing?
Well, I mean, yes. Yes, the simple fact that we have got, you know, music put out by fictional monsters who became hugely popular because of plastic model car is definitely one thing. Insofar as could I sit here in the whole... And now, granted, the albums aren't long. The albums are all, like, less than a half an hour. I don't feel like I'd get a ton of listens. Out of it just myself, but it might be one of those things that, I don't know if you're looking for a little something different to put on at Halloween time, perhaps.
Yeah, it's a fun novelty record, you know?
Totally. And that's exactly what they are. They are absolutely novelty records. And, you know, let's just appreciate for that.
And speaking as a couple of podcasters, it's great to have anything audio to kind of add.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So, not to be only one, you helped us find other Hot Rod artists and other creatures from this point in time. So we now look at the work of Stanley Mouse Miller.
Yeah.
Now, I will be completely honest right now that if you go link in the show notes for the information on Stanley Miller, I will warn you right now, I am currently looking at like my ad tracker software, 207. So if you choose not to click on this link, that's okay. No one's going to let us cover the news for you. Mm. Now, interestingly enough, Stanley Miller actually was born in San Francisco and his father worked as a staffed artist for studios.
Oh, there you go. Another connection.
There's another connection before they eventually moved Detroit. Now, because Stanley's dad had worked for the Mouse, Stanley got the nickname from his friend Mouse. And so even in his youth, he was always drawing. And that's kind of where the nickname. And sure enough, with hot rod culture, pinstriping, detailing paint jobs, and also went the route of airbrush at Hot Rod. Now, Stanley created Fred Flypogger, which does not roll off the tongue super easy, and ultimately to a deal with a grand model. And so I'm looking at this DC comic book ad for Mouse Hot Rod Monsters. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm trying to describe it. We don't have, again, we have a mouse connection, but we don't have, like, a Rat Fink lookalike?
No, it's not a...
No, the mouse in this sense, like, I'm looking at this guy and he's going, greetings, Earth people, hip cats, chicks, my name's Fred Flypogger, the good... and it's a guy, barefoot, in jeans, shirtless, again, big mouth, kind of beatnik beard, large teeth, big wiggly, you know, oversized eyes with a little bit of bloodshot to him, crazy unkempt hair,
right?
You know, he's got little flies around him because he's stinking. But I think it's funny because he's holding a mouse in his hand and that mouse is holding a brush, right. Which of course that is, you know, that's Mouse himself. And so he's got a series of models, but it's all this character Fred Flypogger as different, like in different roles.
Yeah, I mean, I before researching for tonight's episode, I really didn't know these artists or these characters, but I definitely have strong memories of childhood. These kind of weirdo cartoon type characters, specifically in tiny automobiles, tiny hot rods with giant stick shifts, and that seems to be kind of like Mouse's thing. You know, so I guess that's where this, or that's where that could
be. Yeah, we definitely get a bit of that. You know, again, massive back tires, smaller front tires, like full on, like, you know, hot rod style. But yes, you know, the hand reaching up, this super tall shifter. I feel like with Mouses, it goes a step further, but we'll get to that here in a sec. So Fred Flypogger as Flip Out the Beachcomber. So we actually have a surf related, which I think is great. I'm all for that. And again, as Speed Shift. Now, Speed Shift is interesting because there's no car.
Right. He is the vehicle.
Yeah. Like, there is a giant set of rear tire, you know, a big, you know, probably solid rear axle and center diff. The eight ball shifter is not attached to anything but his hand. He's holding a steering wheel, just torn off from himself. The engine is seemingly in his head and upper back, which is really kind of bizarre. And then we also have Fred as Super Fuzz. And Super Fuzz, he's actually got the full hot rod, but I guess like supposed to also cop. And he has got a club with a nail through it. He has a helmet with a siren on top. And it is. It's off the wall kind of bunk. I don't know what to tell you, man. It is it is that quintessential. You get that hyper detail where you've got like, oh, you know, little chest hair, beard stubble, the teeth are crooked, you know, teeth are kind of gangrenous. Again, bugging out eyes. I feel like if anything that kind of spans all the way through here, like all the way back to the to now, it's the bugging out of the
And it's interesting because Mouse, I mean, I think he's still alive. I think Big Daddy Ed Roth
is. He has, yeah.
But whereas Roth, I guess, was also obviously an artist, he was a hot rod builder, where it seems like Mouse went more into the graphic design area. He did a lot of like album cover. Great. I think he designed Bogo, the logo.
Did he really?
Well, according to Wikipedia. He, you know, the one with the, I guess, and this part's pretty funny, talking about Disney. In 2002, he filed a lawsuit against Pixar and Walt Disney Pictures against the film Monsters, Inc., alleging that the characters of Mike and Sully were based on his drawing of something called Dust.
Interesting.
Very, very, he had a lot of acclaim outside the world of kind of the weirdo hot rod.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, what what unfortunately we kind of like lack in terms of story or Stanley Miller, we kind of make up for with Bill Campbell's weird.
Oh my gosh.
Bringing, you've got a couple of great images.
Yeah.
And again, I'm looking at, he worked with the Hawk model. Mm-hmm. And we've got Tigger the Way Out Dragon, Daddy the Suburbanite.
Yeah.
Which I found a little weird.
That one's great. And,
yeah, no, let me get the description. Because the jaunty hale fellow who drives a coffin-like car and reaches the peak of his career every Halloween, haunts houses, robs grave, produces panic, and is completely lovable. Ugh, perfect perplexed commuter. So he's kind of crazy looking, but he also kind of looks like a businessman. But yeah, sure enough, is driving a coffin mobile, which oddly enough, on some car auction site right now, there is a coffin dragster, or, you know, hot rod for sale.
Oh, my God.
I will say this about Bill Campbell's work here. A lot of the eyes from character to character, Digger, Daddy, Davey, the motorcycle blaster, Leaky Boat Louie, Francis the Foul, he's a basketball player.
Right.
Sure. Why not?
Why not?
And Freddy Flameout. The eyes are all very similar. So I'm almost getting caught up more in the fact that don't more different from each other.
Mm-hmm.
But again, sharp teeth, exaggerated features. We have all of that going on. A story I found really interesting.
Oh, yeah.
As I was reading this today. Now, this is actually in Bill's own word, which I think is fantastic. The weirdos, so it's a weird dash OHS, and they're not even caricatured, car ickichers, love it. So they were produced from about 1960 forward, and they came about, again, because, you know, most model builders were kind of stagnated time. Bill was potentially going off to work for the DeSoto Chemical Company, but before he did, his bosses at Hawk were like, hey, you know, hit us with something outside the box, you know, we need something, let's see what you got. And so he threw together some artwork, his bosses were kind of underwhelmed by it. But the stuff stayed up in the conference room. They didn't take it down, like, after the meeting. But later in that same week, Hawk Model was hosting a group of their distributors. And so, of course, you know, you do the tour of the plant and all that fun stuff. And then they end up in the conference room, and the distributor got sight of this art. And they went, oh, my God, this is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Our customers are going to eat this up. And they were like, okay, yeah, because we're totally going to make these. Yeah, these absolutely.
Of course. Yeah.
So they wanted to have stuff ready for hobby, and it was really short. But they're like, well, what do we call them? And Campbell goes, just had this offhanded comment. He's like, the weirdos.
Right.
And so it stuck. So the turnaround time for this was really tight. And because of that, it was decided that he'd start on the finish art for the box top while the die cast are coming up, the dies for setting the model pieces. And so it actually turned out pretty big discrepancy between what you saw in the box and what the finished product looked like.
Right.
But all this stuff really took off. Again, we're looking at, you know, 6-3 onward for all of this stuff. Orders when things were going were topping the hundreds of thousands. Yeah. So these were ever. So it went from having the initial set that we kind of covered in that graphic, and then there was like a second release with names like Killer McBash and Wade a Minute.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were like, you know what? This stuff is amazing. Maybe we could expand other aspects, you know, hobby industry. So soon enough, there were trading cards, Milton Bradley game cals, records. Which we will actually, you know what? There is, again, it's on YouTube now. These guys haven't made it to Spotify yet. So if you want to hear it, it's on YouTube. But here is a quick clip from the sounds of the Silly Surfers and the Weirdo.
All right. Now Huey is a guy who ain't very smart. He just rambles along in his crazy car. He shows no class. It acts like a clock, and there's always a smell around Huey's hot rod.
Now, they sound, honestly, a little similar, I think, to our Roth gang of musicians. But admittedly, I haven't listened to, like, every last second of all these albums. I feel like the Weirdos and the Silly Surfers make more use of, what, weird sound effects? You know, when I was finding a good clip to throw a show, I had kids at the table and I didn't bother having my headphones plugged in. They kind of kept looking up. They're like, what is that?
Right.
Like, and I was trying to explain it simply. There was no explaining.
No, there's no, yeah, there's nothing simple about this. For sure.
And I tried, like, I turned around. I'm like, see, it was these crazy monster 60. Yeah. So, you know, you've got, wait a minute, Huey Hut Rod, you know, and he's.
His house is like a little shack. It's like a little hut.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Drag hag is like a baby, yes, pushing baby carriage, but it's also a hot rod. Corvette. Hip chick, a dolly. Who? Ship trolley. Got it. Love it.
Yeah, it's funny because the female... Excuse me. I'm getting excited talking about this. The females are not quite as bonkers as, you know, the guys.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
a little bit, yeah. But here's the thing that really blew my mind. It's one thing to have, you know, all sorts of other ephemera out there in, like, hobby industry. But they, the Weirdo begat the Silly Surfer.
Right.
Right? So there was a whole, like, new
Another aspect. Series, yeah.
Yeah. So, and these are all kind of a little bit more, like, I don't want to say wholesome. They're not quite as extreme and monstrous as the Weirdos. But Hot Dogger Hanging 10, Beach Bunny Catching Rain. It's not so much they have names, but more they have, like, captions. So there is a whole group, like, two whole groups going on at the same time. Hawk models. Now here's the crazy. Here's the crazy part. This is what I was trying to get to before, but I had to introduce this. Hawk was inevitably bought up by Tester.
Okay.
And Testers had the idea of, like, maybe let's make a TV series featuring these characters. You know, in Campbell's own words, he says, "Since it's easier to be a historian rather than a prophet, I can only say that the TV program missed it. I'm sure the objective was to create a new market of young Weirdos custom." Could see the rationale for reworking the figures, like the eyelids and less threatening mouth elements, but on the screen, the entire concept took on a different look. But the on-screen presentation hoards into watching a Chinese fire drill. I don't blame the producers of the film, for they had the objective laid down by Test. We want to sell those, all 20 of them. And if I've learned anything, is if you've got a show, way too many characters, none of them get good stories.
Right, yeah. I mean, obviously, I'm assuming it was going to be an animated.
Yes.
Which would have been cool. It would have been neat, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Would have loved it. Kind of would have. I'm getting sort of a Munsters vibe slash mixed with the, there were a couple episodes of the Flintstones. Stones had neighbors, Adams, sort of.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just love all of this. I feel like some of the Hot Wheels that we played, some of them were bizarre, like, in some sense, intellectual sense.
Absolutely. One of my most favorite Hot Wheels ever was the Stagecoach turned into a hot rod.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And that was based off an actual vehicle that was built, you know, by these guys in this era. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So we kind of touched on it toward the end that the 60s gave us anything in car culture, it's surf rock.
Oh.
And the explosion of surf culture after Gidget hit the screens in 59 brought all sorts of character in the public eye. Now, my era of surf culture, it was the mid to late.
Right.
So I've got, you know, cartoons like Kookmeyer and Surfer Magazine, which itself, you don't get, like, a lot of creatures and monsters, but there are a fair number of comics where, you know, you're, like, you're identifying different types of people, like you would see in the lineup. And they are drawn in that more caricature style. So there's element of it there. You know, I actually have a handful of PDFs, older surfs, and I flipped through time, late 60s,
okay,
just to see, do we have anything like this, even in the advertising? And there really wasn't much. There was one cartoon in the May 69, and it's really kind of surreal. Like, everything in terms of, like, advertising and layout in the magazine, it's a lot more, like, soul surfing, hippie-ish style, which is fine. But in this kind of surreal cartoon, cartoon, there's one panel that has basically this flaming eyeball with arms and legs on a surfboard ripping through a flaming barrel.
Oh, okay.
Right? And I mean, like, not a surfing.
Yeah.
And that was about as crazy as that got. I mean, this is kind of like Mike Wazowski on it.
Mm, okay.
But kind of bringing these creatures up into the 80s and into kind of our...
Yeah.
Two names come right to mind with her wild creation. First off, Steve Nazar.
Okay.
Steve worked with TNC Surf to design a variety of characters for them. Thriller Gorilla, Joe Cool, the Cool Cats, a trio of tiki mask wearing surf beasts that only very recent gotten.
Oh wow!
Amongst others, yeah.
I only remember them from the video game.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. There was TNC Surf Wood and Water for the NES.
Right.
Still have it. Love that game very much. But there were, I mean, dozens, if not hundreds, of stick shirts, all sorts of stuff with these guys plastered all over it. Nazar himself credits Mad Magazine as an influence. Of course, Mad Magazine being, we didn't really touch on that, but Mad Magazine throughout the 57, you know, very satirical in a lot of senses, would also kind of do that kind of almost monster caricature kind of look to some of their characters, or kind of to take the piss out of celebrity, kind of paint them in that light. Nazar also credits DC and Marvel Comics. You know, we really didn't touch on comics at all throughout this, but that definitely is an influence. And oddly enough, Playboy cartoons,
huh.
Because I'm sure that's the only looking at play. I mean,
he read it just for the articles.
Exactly.
Let's be honest.
Exactly.
But you're right. I mean, this topic is so rich. I mean, we could almost do a couple extra episodes. We didn't really talk, like you said, about Mad Magazine, Robert Crumb. There's so many other things that could be touched.
This was very quickly one of those things that once I kind of started digging, I went, oh, this goes way deeper.
Mm-hmm.
Then I realized, like, how am I going to hit all of them, give this kind of comprehensive look? And then I had to accept that I wasn't. I was going to hit the stuff that I identify with and that I recognize. That I found it. A lot in Nazar's work. Once he and TNC parted ways, he kept the rights to those characters.
Okay.
And so he has since started Thriller. I've got a link to the site. I've got a number of their t-shirts. He will occasionally like reissue old stickers.
Mm.
and stuff. He's also done art for like the, what is it? The Big Dogs.
Oh yeah, I
sure. Brand. He's done a lot of art for them. And while it doesn't kind of take on that same monstrous tone, there is that kind of extreme of like, you know, a really nasty wipeout, or you know, skateboarding and like, you know, hitting the ground and like scraping yourself up. So there are elements of that kind of gore, for lack of a better term. Now, the last person I'm really going to focus on in terms of this episode has crossover in surf and skate. Obviously, you know, it's really easy in the skate world where, you know, you've got the musical and punk rock. You've got literally falling on a wave versus falling on concrete or falling on a ramp are two very different things. And so in terms of, you know, that kind of like extremeness, the monster aspect, you know, coupled with the pain of a nasty crash in terms of skateboarding, that all kind of like fits together. But Jimbo Phillips, Santa Cruz native, son of Jim Phillips. Jim Phillips, if you've ever seen a Santa Cruz skateboard sticker, the red meatball with the yellow text that we pay homage to.
Yeah, our own logo.
With our own Phenomena City Limits logo. Jim Phillips is the guy who created that fifth. You know, also did the Screaming Hand logo for Santa Cruz Skateboard. His son, who is also a Jimbo, goes by Jimbo, took up that exact same kind of art style. And his work has a ton of punk music, skate culture, surf culture. He's created a whole slew of characters, scene that really kind of push that eye-bugging style to whole new levels. I'll tell a quick story. Many years ago, when our kids were much smaller, we were in Santa Cruz. We wanted to stop for a bite to eat. I really, really wanted Pleasure Pizza, and everybody else kind of wanted something else.
Okay.
So we stopped in across the street at a place called East Side. which actually served pleasure pizza. But you could get other stuff. So I was still able to get what I wanted. But they have a lot of Jimbo's art up on the walls.
Oh, cool.
And his stuff is, you know, again, at times hyper detailed. Like, you know, not just eyes bugging out, but like skull cracking, brain flying out kind of like stuff. And I remember my kids being kind of a little weirded out eating there because they couldn't stop looking. At his art.
What was their reaction?
They didn't love it. They were kind of freaked out by it.
Oh no.
At that younger age.
Okay.
And honestly, I get it. I get it. There's times that I look at some of his stuff and I'm going like, ugh, okay, I'm looked out. But I also really admire his art because it can be detailed and so well done. But he's got a skate squat. He's got a Sasquatch out skating.
Yeah.
You got Toxic Surfers, Crazy Talks, insane pizza slices. Like some of the stuff, like it's not just stickers, it's not just shirts, but you can actually get a mask of like the Crazy Pizza slice.
Oh wow.
So
now he's the guy that did the blue hand that's palm?
Yeah, okay. His dad did it originally.
Oh, I see.
Okay. But obviously since there's been different variations on it, there was a COVID version that had a mask on.
Oh no.
There's one that's a Shaka.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of blends from father to son in a lot of ways.
Yeah, because I kind of feel like that hand and Rat Fink are like people that maybe aren't even with any of them. Those are probably two that there's like at least recognize.
Absolutely. I think you could find people recognize, if not the screaming hand, then easily, you know, the Santa Cruz logo.
Yeah.
Planet wide. Mm-hmm. Now, I will tell you right now, we have got links to Steve Nazar's shop and Jimbo Phillips' shop. Even if you just want to go check it out, I will tell you right now, the banner for the official website of Jimbo Phillips has got someone on there whose eyes are coming out of his head. His brain has flown out of his head and has sprouted arm. He is vomiting up all sorts of stuff. Tongue is hanging out, snot coming out of his teeth look crooked and chipped. Oh and his head that you see, I've just noticed, is actually detached from his body because there is his spine. Like, it is out there. It is a little extreme. So if you are super squeamish,
right,
maybe it's not for you. But the very first item on there is a set of skate squatch coasters. So you can see that. But again, bugging out eyes, mouth open, sharp teeth, tongue hanging out. Jimbo Phillips has done, like, band album art. He's done posters for live show for different band, get, you know, copies, even like what he calls the taco has bugging out eyes. You know, if you find yourself in Santa, they're actually, he's done on the side of it, and he's done a sticker, it's the protector sticker, and sure enough, bugging out eyes,
there you go.
So yeah, it's a whole bunch of stuff. What I think is really kind of cute, and I'll be honest, maybe I'll wrap with this, is that for as extreme as his art, he's actually got a cult keep on
thing. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
And it's you know, it's skate based.
Okay.
And it's all his art, but it's like his art cult.
Oh, okay.
It's not extreme. It's not top children.
Right. Right.
He illustrated. Okay. He didn't write it. Adam Reber wrote it. It's illustrated by our Jimbo. And it's kind of interesting to see like his art style, but not, you know, completely gross.
That's cool. It's something for the next generation coming up.
Totally. Totally. That's but awesome. Like I said, you want to see images of all this kind of stuff. It's all going to be in the show now. It's a lot. There's so much, and there's so much we didn't touch on that I think we could have.
Well, man, I got to say that in my opinion, the best kind of rabbit holes are the, and this gets my thoughts going and race. Like I'm thinking about, you know, hip hop and graffiti art culture. It's like, what's, you know, does that come down from like the Herbies of the old boxcar or that kind of
thing? Oh yeah, no, yeah. That's that. Yeah. And if our topics generate thoughts like that, that's awesome.
Right.
I will say this. After I stopped coughing, sorry, I've gotten really animated and I've talked more today than I probably have in like maybe the past.
Man.
But when we were reformulating the show as Phenomenon, I said to myself, it would be so cool if we had some really awesome show art.
Right.
And I said, well, we'll probably never be able to afford it, but I'm at least going to reach out to Steve Nazar and I'm going to reach out to Jimbo Phillips and be like, hey, just out of curiosity,
yeah,
what would it cost?
Yeah,
you know. And I guarantee you, it's way, way more than we can ever.
Is it really? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe one of these days we'll, you know, if we sell enough of our aprons on our site, or
yes,
t-shirts, you know, maybe we can build that money up.
Our Spreadshirt shop. Yeah, go buy something over at Spreadshirt. I actually just put up in the past week, I should say John put up, I designed a John, another shirt design.
That's right. It's looking good.
Yeah, you like it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I kind of took inspiration from the Anti-Club shirts and went Paranormal Social Club.
Nice.
So, you know, if you want to show off your paranormal interests and maybe get social with someone, go grab that. Well, before we get to plugs, because we're not going down that route just yet, you have you have something from the archives.
I do.
Yeah. Tell us.
Well, we've got an old one here, folks. We've got an article from November 4th, 1870, from the Tri-Astoria.
Wait, Tri-Weekly?
Tri-Weekly. So I guess that's...
So three times a week?
So like once every like eight hours?
Or does that mean it's at once every...
Maybe. Or it's like the...
Because bi-weekly is...
Or it's like the Tri-County. So yes, we got an article here from 1870.
Okay.
And it's a kind of a crazy little ghost story because, you know, we all have our favorite ghost stories out there, but I'll tell you, I don't know about you, Taylor, but I've never heard of a ghost barber.
That's news to me.
This is a weird one. So here we go, folks. A week or more ago, we alluded to some misoccurrences in a house in Dunn County, Wisconsin. According to a reporter, Paul Pioneer, the family consists of husband and wife. The trouble commenced months ago. House articles, raiment, were cut or not. Two persons were induced to visit the house and investigate. They took with them pieces of cloth, lock and drawer, and the room. They waited an hour downstairs, and then the cloth had been shreds. A five-year-old child, get this, a five-year-old child, left alone for a few without thought, had her hair cut close to her head, and was unable to say how it was done, as she had no one. Oh my gosh. A venerable elder who thought the good book, in all caps, capital, all powerful to exorcise, entered the room.
Exorcise, not exercise. We're not having them do aerobics. Come on, people.
Feel the burn. They're going to exorcise that demon.
Feel the burn.
Right. They're going to exorcise the demon influence. Entered the room where the liveliest experienced with his Bible arm. He was surprised to see a broad axe traveling towards him. Apparently of its own volition, and he dropped the book, and that broad axe had chopped the Bible to pieces. So this is, I mean, it's kind of like a crazy poultry, but the part that just got me, I was just like, you know, here's a little kid, hair is getting cut by a ghost. So wow.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Although I would like to point out that on the same page here, it's worth noting that Bramel's Coffee Stand is now open on Shenamis Street in Astoria, Oregon. The public now supplied with a superior quality of hot coffee, cakes, oysters, huh? Pig's feet, what? Confectionery, because that's what I want to think of when I have pig's feet. Cigars, tobacco, pipes, notion, Ivan, etc.
Well, you know, hopefully after 150 years, there's a Yelp page for this coffee house with the pig's feet.
I hope so.
I think and that oysters. Would be fascinating. And oysters.
Pig's feet and oysters.
I'll have the oyster with my coffee, please. Thanks very much.
No thanks.
Oh my gosh.
No, crazy.
What an episode. This was fun. This was a fun one. It was out of our wheelhouse, but it was really creative. It kind of livened
that's
it up, you know?
Kind of where I wanted to go. I wanted to kind of pay homage. I wanted to talk about cryptids, but keep it kind of...
Right, exactly.
I mean, it's completely selfish, I won't lie.
No, it's good. Love it.
I have to admit, you know, we're kind of talking and planning out our next couple months worth of episodes. You know, I know people always say, you know, disclosure is imminent, but for us, disclosure is this month.
Oh, teaser. I like it.
That's right, teaser. And then probably talk about the time that Star Trek abducted human.
Holy cats.
From the past. It's going to get weird.
I can't wait.
It was going to be fun. Hey, that is it for our show this month, though. You can follow us over on Twitter at Phenomena City. You can follow me at BusBuddha71. And you can follow Seb
at Clan McWeffin.
That's right. Subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. Please rate as well. We want to give plenty of mahalo to Yaki Orchestra for letting us use their intro and outro. Go give them a follow at Tiki Yaki on Instagram. Check out TikiYakiOrchestra.com to buy their merch music. We've got merch, like we were just talking about. I think three different shirt designs. I've got two more that I want to put up that I just haven't gotten around to doing yet. And so, yeah, we've got that on shirts, hoodies, bag, stickers, mug thing. So, yeah, you go and you're, you know what? Yeah, I love that meatball logo, but I want to support these guys. Go grab that shirt.
Nice.
I need one. I haven't gotten one yet. But hey, if you want to throw some cash our way to keep the hosting going, we always appreciate that. Any bit helps. You can do that, excuse me, over at patreon.com/notlg. And if I didn't mention, hit up notlg.myspreadshop. Not the easiest URL to rattle off your tongue, but if you want to get armor, that's where to go. All right, folks, that is it for this month. We will catch you next month at Exclusives. In the meantime, maybe not even just find something, draw something.
Heck yeah.
Good night.
Good night, folks.
Actually have a surf related,
yes,
which I think is great. I'm all for that.